Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Holly Hutton, and welcome to my podcast, Everyone Loves Horses. Now, I'm a horse lover. I grew up riding horses. I lived at a boarding stable for a while. I competed, and now I just have horses in my backyard. Now, typically, you can hear me as one half of the Robin Holly Show, which can be heard on Odyssey Country Radio. And if you listen to our show, or you see us on social media, you're going to notice that we get the honor of interviewing a ton of country music superstars. I mean, we've talked to everybody from Garth Brooks to Reba McEntire to Jason Aldean to Carrie Underwood. It's been really, really exciting. And every single time that we have interviewed somebody, if they have brought up horses, I am so excited. Sometimes I may work horses into a conversation just for fun. I just really like to talk about horses, and I think it's fun. So that's what this podcast is all about. I'm talking to superstars all about horses and just getting like a glimpse of how horses have taken a role in their lives in some way, whether it was in the past or they're doing it now. And I'm really excited about this interview that I did with Cody Johnson. Now, if you don't know anything about Cody Johnson, the first thing that you need to know is that he is an amazing human, which, by the way, is the title of his double album that is out right now, which is really, really good. And he also has a documentary based on a song that he wrote called Dear Rodeo. If you've seen the documentary, you know how great it is. If you have not seen it, I encourage you, after you're done listening to this podcast, to go watch it. Now, his documentary features Reba McEntire, who, by the way, fellow horse lover, former rodeo girl, too, and about how Cody gave up rodeo bull riding for his country music career, which I think, by the way, is just awesome how his brain works, because he chose bull riding as a profession. And then the other option, his plan B, if you will, is to be a country music superstar. So I just absolutely love that. Like I said, he's an amazing human. And he's been really successful as an independent artist, although now he's signed with record label Warner Music Nashville. He's had a number one song recently with his song Till You Can't, amazing song. He also has sold out the Houston Rodeo 3 times, which includes Houston's Rodeo Day Number One, which in the past, the only artist to be able to sell out Houston Rodeo's Day Number One in the past has been Garth Brooks and George Strait, and now Cody Johnson. And all this is amazing, but also to add to it, he is a horse lover. So please welcome Cody Johnson.
Look at all those belt buckles.
Belt buckles!
Woo, woo! Hey, I was trying to get my AirPods to connect, but they're not.
Cody, are you ready to talk about horses?
I have no idea what to expect on this. I read that. It was like, talk about horses. I was like, yeah, I was joking. I was like, yeah, I really like the brown kind.
The brown ones?
The spotted ones.
The white ones are good. Yeah. I don't
can
think
you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you perfect. Okay, perfect. By the way, the song Dear Rodeo is amazing. It brings tears to my eyeballs, which not all the songs do it, but some songs do. So it's really good. Congratulations on it. I know your documentary is going to cover a lot of the rodeo stuff and a lot of the bull riding stuff. But what I found fascinating about you is that you're super into cutting horses now, and yeah, you're doing that. Can you tell me when, first I want to know, when did horses start? How did you grow up?
So I'm a first generation rodeo cowboy in my family. My dad worked for the prison system there in Huntsville for the Texas Department of Criminal Justice. He worked there for 32 years and retired, but most of his career was spent on a horse, either as the assistant dog sergeant. They would use those tracking dogs for those guys, or working guys in the field riding a horse. And so I was always around horses, but we never did own anything. We grew up pretty moderate income, not a whole lot to spare. So horses were always a bigger expense that we never had. I had friends with a lot of horses. And whenever I started riding bulls in high school, one of my friends, Michael Fortenberry, who is still a very successful team roper, I would haul to high school rodeos and stuff with him. And he was a calf roper and a team roper. And so I would get on his horses, bareback a lot at the house with just a halter and ride, just for strength on my legs and balance and stuff like that. So, I was always told that team roping was a rich man's sport. And I don't know who ever told my dad that I'd never tried to buy a cutting horse because there's a huge difference.
Because it takes a lot of money honestly, to ride cutting horses, right? Like,
yeah.
I come from a totally different background. That's why I do find it pretty fascinating about team roping and cutting, because I come from like a hunter jumper background.
Yeah.
So like literally the opposite as you are. And to the point where I was like, are there cowboys? Are cowboys real? Is that like a real, in my brain, it's like this romantic idea that there's like a cowboy and it only happened in the Wild West. Are there actually cowboys for the rest of the world?
Our hat line is with Resist All Hats, and I love their slogan. It's just, we live it every day. And I think there are people, there are way more Americans in this country that still live by that Western code that a lot of people want abolished, because it's basically the whole code is you help out everybody and don't expect anyone to help you up off the ground, and you got to dust yourself off. Nobody, nothing's going to be handed to you. That's kind of a lost way of thinking, you know, but it's very old school. It's funny. I just noticed Lonesome Dove is playing in the background. I can see it in the mirror back here. I'm like, that's just kind of, we were talking about it. Me and the guys were watching this earlier, and I was like, that cowboy code still exists. It really does.
Yeah.
And it has to do with work ethic and how you present yourself to the rest of the world too. So,
what's your favorite cowboy movie? Is it Lonesome Dove?
Yeah, it's definitely got to be Lonesome Dove. my 6-year-old daughter knows this thing by heart now. So,
do your kids ride?
No. So here's where I am in my career. I've been so busy for the last 13 years that Dustin Noblett, who is the CEO of Pro Equine, and Ricky Boland, which is the president of Hatco, which is Resist All. You know, these are friends of mine that are big, big into the industry, and they've pushed me for years to rope, to ride, to be more prevalent in the industry. And in their words, not mine, is because you have the talent, you need to start pressing it. It's just been really hard to justify over the last, especially the last 6 to 8 years of, you know, how am I going to have horses at home that I can't take care of? I can't go compete on. And so just recently, because of, you know, the shutdown due to COVID-19 and all this other crap that went on, I started really looking at it. And, you know, it was one of the things where I started talking to my wife about it. And, you know, most of the decisions, most every decision that we make is pray about it and see how you feel about it. Mm-hmm. My good friend of mine, Bryant Slaughter, he's our cutting horse trainer. And right before, about 2 months before everything shut down and my touring schedule went to a complete halt, I was looking at a horse from the Tommy Mannion Ranch. His name was, he was out of Smooth as a Cat. Really, really nice, really, really nice breeding. It was a very expensive horse, and we were going to do it. And my wife said, pray about it. So I did. And, you know, I'm not perfect, but I do believe in listening. And my gut said, no, just no, 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 don't do it. And it really sucked because I really wanted that horse. And 2 months later, everything shut down, and I was pretty thankful that I listened. I had a really expensive yard ornament.
It would be like a really big problem. Do you remember the first time that you got on a horse?
I think my dad was the first person to put me on a horse. We were out there at the prison farm, and he let me walk around for a little bit. But I was pretty, you know, I was young. I think I was probably 6 years old.
When did you first start loving rodeo and horses? Because I remember the time, like, I was 8 years old and I didn't care about horses until I was 8, and then all of a sudden it like hit me and I was like, but I love them. So do you remember first time you're like got bit by the bug?
I was attracted to bulls first. It was kind of drilled into me. I'm not going to throw off on my parents because I love my parents, but it was kind of drilled into me like, that's just, horses aren't an option, you know, money, that's not going to be there. Don't set your sights on stuff that you can't have. And, you know, that was them trying to not disappoint me. But also at the same time, too, you know, I feel like always set your sights way too high. You know, that's me as a person now at 34. Yeah. Always set your sights way too high. And you'll fall, land somewhere right there in the middle and be perfectly content. Yeah. But I fell in love with bulls first. And riding bulls really, it really helped me not to have any fear. You know, a lot of people, they want a rope or they want to ride a cutting horse, but then they have to start right then at, you know, whatever age they are, trying to figure out how to ride. And riding was never an issue for me. It just, and you'll see that when I team rope now, things can go wrong. You'll never see me look uncomfortable. Even if, you know, the horse starts pitching or whatever, you won't see me look uncomfortable because I got desensitized by the bulls first, you know.
Right. And horses, you're not afraid to fall off.
Right. And I mean, and I've already broken enough bones. It doesn't matter. And, you know, and horses are so much more graceful and smart and intelligent. And it's just now I think at 34, I finally have, well, the time off, the financial yeah. stability to do so, and right. the want to, because my daughters are 6 and 4, and it's time for me to start instilling that responsibility of having a life that you have to take care of and feed and doctor. And also, you know, I want them to remember that daddy was a freaking cowboy.
In your documentary, you're talking with Reba McEntire, who I'm such a huge fan of. And she says, that's how I grew up, right? My mom is a huge fan and I love Reba McEntire. And so I found this interesting that she said that rodeo released her. Do you feel the same way, that rodeo released you as well?
Well, I think it's two different stories. You know, she could have gone into the state and pursued a rodeo career. I believe that. I think she believes that. But she had a big opportunity to go hit it big in Nashville. And that was for me, the story was I was released in a very different way, in that I had to be the one to break up with rodeo because I knew it wasn't working out. And, you know, that sucked, because this love that I had, you know, stopped loving me back. And that's, you know, that's really the story of it. But, you know, I think what her perspective on it is that rodeo and Western lifestyle fosters things like character and work ethic and honesty. You know, I mean, I went to the BFI, I just roped at the BFI in Guthrie, Oklahoma, the other day. And I took my wallet out, I took my watch off, set it in my rope bag, and never even my cell phone, and never even thought about it. You know, my kids are up here playing in the stands, because that rodeo world, that cowboy mentality, it's a very, very wholesome, it's still a very wholesome crowd. And, you know, I think that's the reason I have the bug now, is because the kind of men that I want to be like, I want to surround myself with, the kind of environment I want my kids to grow up. And I really love competing. You know, mentioned the cutting horses. You know, I ride the cutting horses, and I do ride pretty well, and it's really fun, and it's fun to do something well. It's fun to succeed at something. 2 years ago, I won the celebrity cutting in Fort Worth at the Futurity there, and it was my teammate was Mo Brings Plenty from Yellowstone. And so it's kind of cool, you know, and so we won a buckle together. And but the team roping thing has really, really gotten me. I have roped more since I've been off than ever. It's just, I'm ate up with it.
Because I was going to ask, that was one of my questions, is just why cutting horses? But then you're talking about team roping, which I'm pretty sure, even though I come from a hunter jumper background, those are two separate things. Oh, yeah.
It's two different things. Cutting horses to me is it's precision. It's high breeding and it's mm-hmm. precision, and you have to ride perfect, but it's a lot of horse. And if you'll see people that ride, they get jerked this way, they get jerked this way. It kind of looks chaotic. But when you know what you're doing and you have the athleticism to be able to sit down and you counteract those movements, it looks like your body never moves. And this horse is jumping 20, 30, 40 feet back and forth. And it's a lot. It's kind of it's a little rough stockish in that, because it's boom and go. But team roping is too. You know, as a header in team roping, it's helped me mentally, you know, just to block everything else out, because it's hurry up and ride your horse to the cow. Now, finesse rope, dally off, and slow everything down for your heeler to have a good shot. And it's to me, it's a lot like golf, and I hate golf, but I have found
it's
my
mental. It's yeah. mental, right?
What
it's
guys
mental.
Look for in golf, I've found in team roping.
Guys, if you're golfing and it's not working out, just start team roping, I think is the message there. So with horses, like, I always find that it's taught me so many things. Do you have anything like that rodeo and horses and or have taught you?
So because we're just now in the market for horses, I've spent the last 5 years riding a lot of different horses, mm-hmm. which is really good for your horsemanship. It really is. I mean, yeah. you encounter so many different situations. You figure out when you've been, for instance, when you've been roping on a really top hand, you know, well-trained, what we call an automatic head horse, mm-hmm. you can make a lot more errors and you can not do certain things and he's still going to be there. Whereas when you get on a push horse what I mean is you have to push every button. If mm-hmm. you stop riding, he's going to stop. If you don't hold him in there, he's going to duck left. If you tell him to duck left, he's going to do it. And it requires more out of you. So over the past 4 or 5 years of doing that, I feel like I've gotten better. One of the things that I look for now, and Colby Lovell's, he was the world champion header last year for Team Rope, and he's a pretty good friend of mine. And he's been teaching me a lot. We've been roping a lot together. And one of the horses that I'm looking at is, you know, he's thinking about selling. What I love about it is that it's a sorrel gelding, and he reacts to your mood. If I get in there and I miss a steer or two and I start getting antsy or something, as soon as I start to get worked up in the least little bit, I mean, even just a little bit pissed off because of I'm not roping like I want, he reacts that way. So what it does is it requires me to stay calm, stay completely focused. It's no big deal. And I just think it's therapeutic because you can feel the difference in the relationship. It changes like that, you know. I think that's something that's one of the things I love that horses have taught me is, hey, it's not worth you getting pissed off about. You just need to calm down, be a good example for this horse, and let y'all's energy be positive together.
And that is really, really, really difficult to do because I had a mare that was super reactive like that. And the second that you were stressed, whatever, it was like, oh, no, I need to have a zen moment like before yeah. I even started. Can you tell me a story about a friend that you have met through rodeo?
So whenever I was bull riding in high school, me and my buddies, Mark Johnson, and Codrick Murphy and Tyree Cossie, we were all kind of like that too. We traveled together. You know, there were some other guys, Bobby Shane and Ricky, and there was different people that would come around, but the four of us were pretty thick. You know, we were thick as thieves. And those guys were just more talented than I was. They had been riding. They started out riding calves and then went to riding steers and then junior bulls. And they were just more talented. But they, you know, they never treated me like the worst bull rider in the car. You know, Mark and I were the only two white guys. Nobody ever treated anybody like black or white. All we saw was just like how much we wanted to see each other succeed more and more and how the camaraderie and the love that we had for each other. So it was a fun way to grow up, man, because we would show up to these bull ridings and everybody kind of looks at all of us like, look at these. This is just an odd group of pairing of guys, you know. And, you know, Mark had long hair down to here and, you know, got the kid trying to grow a red beard. And, you know, back then I didn't have tattoos, but Codrick and Tyree are covered in tattoos. And it, you know, I worked and worked and worked. And there was this one night in Dayton, Texas. It was a CPRA rodeo. And I drew a pretty good bull. And I'd been kind of just really down on myself and really needing some, I need to ride one. And I did. The bull comes out, and I mean, it was probably one of the best rides I'd ever made. I think it was like 82 points. It wasn't, I didn't go 95 or anything crazy like that. It was probably somebody really else's day off, but man, I spurred well, and I'll never forget it. Whenever I jumped off, you know, Codrick and all those guys, my friend Justin Richards, who's no longer with us, you know, it looked like I'd really done something great. I think I was like sixth hole in the money or something like that. It didn't even pay that great, but they were, it was the fact that they were so proud. It had given me that confirmation. It was just, it was a good moment.
And that just kind of reminds me of like you talking about those guys is in the teaser for your documentary, which I love, is Chris Kyle's wife, which she says they don't make them like that anymore when she's talking about rodeo guys, about her husband. What do you think is missing and how can we raise our kids better so that is not like a thing that we would say now?
Funny, I was having a conversation with somebody here this morning that we were talking about, you know, what's going on with kids today? Yeah. What's going on with these younger generations? And it's really, I don't have another way to put it besides when I was a kid, we didn't get participation trophies. If you lost, you lost. And that was mm-hmm. that, you know. And Trent, my buddy Trent Willman, my producer, he's a part of the documentary as well. He's said something over the years that always stuck with me is part of being a cowboy is knowing that any one of your friends is going to give the shirt off of their back. They'll always have a hand out to pick you up. and help you out. But also, as a cowboy, you need to be prepared for nobody to give you anything and you dust yourself off. You know, and that's, I think that that's something that's lost. I mean, to each his own. You know, somebody can hear me say this stuff and completely disagree with me, and that's one of the beauties of the way I think we've forgotten about in this country is the fact that we're all supposed to believe different stuff. We're all supposed to feel different ways. It's just that when we start making excuses for not being able to handle failure, it really puts a big, huge Bobo Band-Aid on a lot of our younger generations, and that's not that. What that does is it breeds entitlement, and it breeds laziness, in my opinion.
Right.
You know, a lot of people want to. It's funny. I want to make it on TikTok. I want to make it big on whatever that. I want to make it big on YouTube, and it's going like. But what about going out and working your butt off for something and putting a good example? That's one of the things I take the most pride in my career. Is that, you know, any kid that wants to check my track record. We've never been given anything. It's always been go work for it. If you want something, go work for it. And there's a poem I want you to read, and I might pull it up on my phone and read it to you before we get off, but it's called...
I would absolutely love that.
The Man in the Arena. Have you ever heard it by Theodore Roosevelt?
I don't think so, but will you pull it up on your phone?
My favorite Chris LeDoux song is 10 Seconds in the Saddle, because he says, I'd rather take 10 seconds in the saddle for a lifetime of watching from the stands. So,
thanks.
A friend of mine showed me this poem. Let's see if I can read this kid. It is not the critic who counts, not the man who points out how the strong man stumbles, or where the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust, sweat, and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs, who comes short again and again, because there is no effort without error and shortcoming. But who does actually strive to do the deeds? Who knows great enthusiasms, the great devotions, who spends himself in a worthy cause, who at best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement, and who at worst, if he fails, at least he fails while doing so daring greatly. This is my favorite part. So that his place shall never be with those cold and timid souls who never know victory or defeat.
And that literally is just similar to what your song is about. Right. Isn't it? Wouldn't you say?
To some degree, I agree with you. I think it's because I always wanted to be that man in the arena. I wasn't. Whether it was bull riding, whether it was music, whether it's team roping, or any one of my business endeavors, I always want to be the guy that somebody look and go, hey, man, that guy right there, he didn't come to play. I mean, he's serious about it. That's the man in the arena, the man whose face is marred by sweat and blood and dust, you know. But that never to be found among the cold and timid souls that neither know victory or defeat. I just feel like that's the people that are too afraid to put themselves out there because they're worried about how bad it's going to feel when you fall off the bike.
Yeah. And I like that you use bike as a reference because every time you said bike, I was like horse, because it's more general where I think a lot of people can digest that better because
everybody's fallen off a bike,
but not everybody has ridden or fallen off a horse. And I always understand that. And that's why I think it is so special to have horses in your life or to be around them or like them or whatever. But I appreciate, by the way, you talking to me so much, because when I was like, do you think you want to talk to me about horses? And the person was like, oh, I literally watched the documentary. I think it'll be easy. I think it'll be an easy conversation. I was like, okay, good. I think it's just different. A lot of times I'm always talking to artists about music.
It's really funny. Like you mentioned that with the Deer Rodeo thing. So, but when we started talking about Deer Rodeo, Shane Tarleton from Warner Music Nashville said, I feel like there's a bigger story other than just spinning the cowboy side of Cody. And I was like, what is the story? And he's like, the story is how if you hadn't failed, then you wouldn't have your life, all the dominoes wouldn't have played out for you to have the success that you had and have the platform to sing a song like Deer Rodeo that is going to touch so many people on a level that has nothing to do with rodeo or horses or cowboy. And that really hit home with me. And, you know, we were sitting up one night here in Nashville. Me and John Esposito, who's the president at the label, we were just sitting up listening to music, drinking a little wine, hanging out, talking, and he starts playing Deer Rodeo, and he says, hey, just so you know, this is my favorite song on your album. And I'm like, John, we've known each other a while. Like, you're nothing. Like, he doesn't know anything about the Western way of life. I said, so how is it that you connect so well to this song? And he said, when I hear this song, I think about a kid being scared to death, leaving Punxsutawney, Pittsburgh, going to L.A. to start my music career, and then not going the way I wanted. And throughout the years, look, now I'm the president at Warner Music Nashville, and you know, I thought when he can relate to that, somebody else is going to relate to it. And that's what spawned us getting a hold of Sean Silva and starting the record, the documentary. And I started to see that the story of this song, my story, mm-hmm. was affecting me in a whole different way. You know, after a year off of being able to record this thing and seeing the impact of the people that I've talked to that have heard the song and how it spoke to them. And it was really humbling to think, you know, I didn't want to write that song for years and years and years because personally I was so vain and caught up in my own self-loathing of I failed and I don't even want to talk about it. And I was jealous, you know, and there was all these different emotions that I'm just too tough to deal with. And then when I wrote the song and I actually addressed it, it's like it just poured out and I started to see, wow, like if all those things hadn't happened, I wouldn't have been able to write that song. And if I hadn't wrote that song, it would never spawn these other things that are so much bigger than me. You know,
right.
The fact that I'm getting to do a documentary that is going to be hopefully inspirational and help really, I mean, hope, think about how many people are reinventing themselves right now. How many people are stuck with struggle because of what we just went through as a country. To be able to have a song like that and a documentary like that just means so much. It's not like a song me and Dan Couch just sat down and wrote and went, man, we wrote a good song. I really feel like it was a gift, you know?
The Houston rodeo that you sold out, you rode in on a horse. You talked a little bit of it in your trailer and you said that you just ran as fast as you. Can you tell me just about the entrance? Cause you get to ride in on a horse, which by the way, is the coolest entrance ever.
You don't get to ride in, you get to ride out. They call that the Usher Club because Usher rode a motorcycle in and fell over and broke his leg and didn't get to play the show. So they're like,
I never knew that.
You're going to ride in.
I never knew that.
No, they're like, you're going to ride in this SUV with the insurance policy on it. You're going to be escorted to the stage. And once you play your show, you can do cartwheels out for all we care. You can ride a zip line out just as long as we get our show first.
That is so funny. I never knew that. That is amazing. Okay. So
there's a story that you'll hear on the documentary, and I'm not going to give it away here, but that was probably the day before or 2 days before I played the Houston Rodeo. It was probably one of the worst days of my life. And, you know, I had been going through so much of, you know, play, go, go, play, 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 go, go. And I, you know, my manager sitting right here, I think I can say this freely. I barely in 10 years ever said no to anything because I just knew that every time, every opportunity was another opportunity. And it didn't matter if I was tired or homesick or sick. You know, I've played shows with 102 degree fever two nights in a row, and I'm very much branded for what I do. It's very much inside my soul. So whenever we got to Houston Rodeo, and we just played that big show, you know, that first, I knew that was, I was like, things are not going to be the same after this. I just knew it. And I just said to hell with it. You know, back then it was a big circular stage that just rotated. It didn't have the star points that came off of it that lifted up and down and stuff. We didn't get that stage until the next year. So I just ran as hard as I could all the way around. And it was supposed to be a pretty nice little thing. Oh, it was not, it was more like the Kentucky Derby. And, but you know, it's funny you say that because then the following year, when you watch the documentary, you'll understand the very following year, there was so much success had between Houston Rodeo 2017 and Houston Rodeo 2018 leading up to it. And in 2018, we became the first independent artist to ever sell out NRG Stadium. And as I played Deer Rodeo that night, I thought, you know, if I hadn't failed at Bull Riding, if I hadn't have gone through the hard times and the hard years of just busting it out in the honky tonks, if all that hadn't happened, if I had got the record deal that I was pissed off about not getting the year before, then I wouldn't have been able to be the first independent artist to sell it out. The epiphany of, wow, here we are. And that night when I rode out real slow, just taking my fancy time. Yeah, I got my rodeo queen going.
That's fantastic. But can I, one more question? I'll kill myself if I don't. I won't kill myself, but I mean, that's extreme. That was like way extreme. You said you were jealous. Like, you're like, one of the emotions that you had was jealousy. What specifically were you jealous of?
Of how effortless some of my friends like Kodrick and Mark and, you know, my buddy Trey Benton's in the PBR and just, you know, guys, how effortless they made it look to go deal with that amount of physical abuse every night in the arena and to still stay healthy. You know, that was another thing that I did after when I was riding bulls. I was not working out near enough. You know, I work out 3 to 5 times a week, depending on how busy I am. And, you know, I do yoga and balance activities and core strength and, you know, just things that if I had done it back then, I probably would have tried a little longer. But I mean, like I've been saying all along, everything happens for a reason, I guess. But it was a little, I was jealous because that's what I wanted to be. When I was a kid, I wanted to be Tough Edelman. I wanted to be a world champion bull rider. And I thought, my mother and father raised me right. You know, I thought, well, if you work hard enough, it'll happen. And that just ain't true. You know, there's our country is founded on the fact that all men are created equal, and we're not. Because if we were all created equal, I would have 24 gold buckles like Trevor Brazil. So, you know, I think you have to be comfortable with your lot in life, you know.
Right. I mean, you have to note, though, I mean, it's possible that there are people jealous back at you because
so I was going to say that,
you know what I mean? Like, but I mean, obviously, when you're having those emotions, we're like, no, this is what I want. Like,
well,
that
yeah,
is the jealousy.
You think
but
that
then
you know what you want.
Yeah.
You think you know what you want. But it's funny, you know, all those I've had plenty of world champions hang out with me on the bus after a big show and go, God dang, man, this is cool. And I'm like, yeah, it's pretty full circle. You know, I always say, like, I'm not near perfect, nor do I ever want to try to be one of those people that thinks it's possible to be perfect. But I do try to credit God as much as I can, because, like, if you look back at my life, it's just apparent. It's just obvious that he had a plan. And once I got out of the way of myself and him and just kind of was like, what do you want for me? All of a sudden, you know, my path shifts over here. And it's not about the money that I make. It's not about the fame and the, you know, platinum records and gold records. And it ain't about that for me. It's about, look at the position I've been able to give a positive word. Like, I'm in a position where I can spread positivity and I can spread unity through a microphone. And that, to me, that's more important than if I'd ever got to ride bulls.
I know you don't have forever. And I'm just so thankful that you took the chance to just talk about horses.
When I read that, I was like, we're just talking about horses? And they were like, yeah, that's what the info we got. And I was like, well, cool, man. I was like, should I be funny and be like, I really like the spotted ones. And I didn't do it.
Yeah.
I was going to try to do it.
I would have gone along with it because I have a great sense of humor. But when, I mean, rodeo horses, they're literally the same.
I just think that's great, too. You shouldn't change that because it's very, like, you have to come into the interview just being ready to interview. And I like stuff like that. I hate scripted. I hate scripted.
No. I never really scripted it. I just thought of out of my brain, which is why it's so, like, random and off. But speaking of, what is your favorite color of horse?
I don't know why.
I know you're not supposed to choose horses based on color. We know this.
No, I don't know why, but for some reason, as far as roping horses, and, you know, and I don't know particular bloodlines, but I've always noticed that, like, your gray horses tend to be a little bit taller and a little leggier. And I like a taller, bigger gray horse. You know, and I've been some tall, bigger horses with other colors, but I've got two that I can name you that are just big, tall gray horses. And it just seems, I seem to rope better off of them whenever they're taller and they've got a little bit more of a lunge. I've roped off of some shorter horses and I just don't, it doesn't seem to fit me as much. Mm-hmm. So I don't care if that son of a gun's speckled purple and yellow. If he feels good, let's go.
I know. That's what I was saying. You're not supposed to judge, but I always feel like, I mean, we all
now,
have our
the
favorites.
The prettiest horse, I think, is just a beautiful red roan horse, but I have a red beard too, so maybe I'm...
So you're like, we match.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a theme. It's fantastic. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much.
Yes,
all right. Bye.
See you.
If you want to hear more superstars talk about horses, make sure to follow, to subscribe to this podcast. An episode is coming out each and every week. And also follow on social media at Everyone Loves Horses on Instagram and on Facebook and on Twitter. And then you can follow me on TikTok at Giddy Up Holly. And thanks so much for listening.
Hey, what's up, flies? This is David Spade.
Dana Carvey.
Look, I know we never actually left, but I'll just say it. We are back with another season of Fly on the Wall.
Every episode, including ones with guests, will now be on video. Every Thursday, you'll hear us and see us chatting with big-name celebrities.
And every Monday, you're stuck with just me and Dana. We react to news, what's trending, viral clips.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.